I got to ask, why Lawrence Tierney? What led to you devoting this kind of time to Lawrence Tierney?
There were really two reasons. One is that I drank with him once. I drank with Lawrence Tierney back around 1992 after the movie Reservoir Dogs came out. There was a bar called the Formosa Cafe, an old Chinese restaurant on Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood. It's still there today. Mm-hmm. And it's been around since about the 1920s. And in the 1940s, it was a real Hollywood hangout. Warner Brothers offices, studios were on the next block. And you'd have, you know, people, everybody from Humphrey Bogart to Ava Gardner would drink there. Elvis Presley was known to drink there in the 1960s. And by the 1990s, you still had a lot of the old folks drinking there, along with the new generation. You'd look at the bar over there, and there's Keanu Reeves, and there's Tim Burton over there. And meanwhile, there's some old guy with a short sleeve shirt drinking at the bar. And that's who I sat next to. I was sitting at the bar next to this old gruff guy, short sleeve shirt, drinking whiskey out of what they called a bucket, a large glass. I was drinking my vodka out of a bucket. And I recognize that guy. He's the guy that was in Reservoir Dogs. And he turned to me and he said, "How you doing? I'm Larry." Shook hands and we began to chat. And drank there for the next couple hours and spoke with him. And I don't remember what we talked about, but I remember that there were no brawls. There were no fights. He was very well behaved, great guy. And fast forward about 30 years, I'm doing research on another book. I did a book about performers who died on stage. It's called The Show Won't Go On. And I'm going through some newspaper files and I come upon a story and it says, Lawrence Tierney arrested for the 13th time. I said, that looks pretty interesting. And so I looked into that and found out that, no, that wasn't true. It wasn't the 13th time. It was more like the 22nd time.
Yes.
And then the lockdown hit, the pandemic struck. And I wound up sitting at my dining room table and just going through every Lawrence Tierney story I could find, going on the internet and going through ProQuest and newspapers.com and other files and library files and bringing books in, ordering books, et cetera, that had anything about Lawrence Tierney in it. And I took everything I had and typed it out, transcribed everything, single spaced, every article, every story, every clipping, and came up with about 500 single spaced pages. And when I was done, I started reading it and started reading the life story of Lawrence Tierney as a mystery to me, because I wasn't paying a lot of attention to what was going on as I was transcribing. And I get to it, oh, great. Here's a guy. He's from Brooklyn. Great. Makes his way to Hollywood. That's good. Oh, he's in the movie Dillinger. And oh, no. Oh, he's been, oh, boy. And it was like that for the rest of his life. You know, one step forward, two steps backwards.
Sure. Yeah, this is one of the most meticulously researched books I've ever read. I will give you credit. Like, the last 30 pages are just citing your sources. And it's true. I lost count of the arrests. My process is, when I'm reading these books, I take notes. So every couple pages, I stop and take notes so that when I circle back an interview, I can kind of refresh my memory. And I had to stop writing the arrest thing because at first it was interesting. And after a while, I was like, oh, this is just the theme. Like, it's, I mean, he's arrested like every other page. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. In the end, he made about 65 films, had about 35 television appearances and about 70 arrests.
There you go. Love it.
Which, you know, and the rest is history there.
So let's take it from the beginning. So, I mean, he's Dillinger's where it starts, right? I mean, and a little bit more about me too, just this is how much fun it was for me. I grew up in the Bronx, and I grew up in the Riverdale section of the Bronx, which is right next to Manhattan College. So I know Manhattan College. I grew up borders Yonkers. So I know where his dad was. His dad literally was like a reservoir cop.
He was a reservoir cop for sure. Yeah.
So Reservoir would come back for old Larry Tierney. But so it starts with Dillinger. I mean, how, like you said earlier, it was an overnight success. Now he goes from nobody to being a star. But that movie was in the theaters forever, wasn't it? Because I feel like it was regional. It kind of wasn't like today where you get a mass, you know, it comes out everywhere across the country.
Right. In those days, it wasn't like, what's this movie going to do this weekend? You know, it made the headlines because it opened up in Times Square. They had screenings from 9 a.m., you know, till midnight. And there was standing room only in Times Square. That got everything started. And it started opening up across the country. In some cities, it was banned because they thought it was going to, you know, increase juvenile delinquency, et cetera. But it moved across the country over that year. RKO Radio Pictures saw they had something in Tierney, so they started putting him in films. I think the first one he was in was called Back to Bataan with John Wayne. It was a supporting role with John Wayne. And then they began to put him in what they call film noirs, these black and white movies of with, you know, bad women and bad guys. And the first one he did was Born to Kill. And he was so bad and so there was nobody as hard and tough as Lawrence Tierney. And the next one he did was The Devil Thumbs Arise. You have The Devil and Born to Kill. That's, you know, people associate that with Tierney. And everybody saw him as being this really nasty, tough guy when he wasn't. He was funny. He wanted to do comedy. He was a funny guy, but he was stuck in this role. He'd go to a bar. For some reason, no matter what his troubles were, he'd always go to a bar. Even when he wasn't drinking, he'd go to a bar or a club and drink milk. But he'd go to a bar, and somebody, of course, would come up to him and say, "Ah, you're a Dillinger. You ain't so tough, are you?" And then Tierney would punch him.
Yeah.
and that was his problem, was that, you know, he couldn't help himself.
And the stories progress, I mean, almost instantly. So, you know, obviously Dillinger happens, and like you said, he's a household name. And then he rolls right into like Errol Flynn and the Bundy Street Boys and John Decker Mannequin Party, where, you know, it keeps getting slapped by Diane Barrymore. He beating down the Frenchman. I mean, it's real stuff. I mean, this guy was really fighting and making a name for himself, and not the best of ways.
Yeah, he really made the headlines, and really made the headlines when he went to a party at a guy named John Decker's house. John Decker was part of the Bundy Drive Boys. This was John Dillinger and John Barrymore, and W.C. Fields had been part of it in the old days. And these were guys who were a literary crowd, a Shakespeare spouting crowd, and the heaviest drinkers in Hollywood. They were wild. And these guys, Errol Flynn had paid for a house for John Decker, who was an artist. He was a scenic artist and a kind of a scoundrel. And they had an art gallery there, and they had a party. It was right below the Sunset Strip, and all of Hollywood was there. And Lawrence Tierney was there sitting by himself and just drinking and getting into a bit of a funk, when somebody knocked over a glass, which knocked over a bunch of glasses, and it caused glass was everywhere. Tierney got up, punched the guy. Somebody grabbed Tierney. Next thing you know, there were 15 brawls broken out on the lawn of this house. Anthony Quinn's in the middle of it. Tierney's got his shirt ripped open. His chest is bare, and he's taking on all. He went crazy. And that made all the headlines. No one was arrested. By the time the cops got there, everybody got out of there. And Mr. Decker said, "Oh yes, there was fights and drinking. And that's, you know, it was a party. That's what always happens at parties."
Yeah. I mean, it was like I told you earlier, like I was starting to write all this stuff down, and I was like, "Oh man, I can't keep up." I mean, not that I want to wrap this up. I know, but like, if how many arrests do you think it was in total? It had to have been between what, 60 to 70 or?
There were about 70 arrests. Yeah. Not all of them were reported. That's another thing too. It got to the point where in his later days, I talked to people who were with him. Oh, I was with him when he punched out a guy in a bar, and I had to pick him up at the police precinct. And that was never reported. Mm-hmm. The time he spent in Europe, he spent a couple of years there in the mid 60s. There was a rumor that he had borrowed a car from Steve Reeves, who had been known for playing Hercules in the movies. And he had borrowed a car, picked up a hooker, got in a car crash. The hooker was killed. This happened in Spain. He ran to Portugal. He was arrested. He spent 4 years in prison. Everybody's telling me this story, that new Tierney. He told them the story. And I had to say, I'm really, really sorry, but I've done this research on Tierney. I can basically trace all of his movements with maybe a 3-month thing here and there. There was never any 4-year period or 2-year period where he was off the radar. And you got to say, if he was arrested and put in jail in, you know, a Spanish or a Portuguese prison for 4 years, that would make the news over here.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, Chet Baker gets arrested for marijuana and spends a few months in prison, and it's like front page news in the New York Daily News. So that sort of got debunked. But then you talk to other people who knew him, and he was sort of a regular guest in the jail at Madrid, because they'd be drunk and they put him in jail and let him go, sort of like Otis the Drunk and Andy of Mayberry.
Sure. Yeah. So there's, you know, of all the arrests, one of them's got a great story, which is the Andy Dobek story. I mean, I love the odds of that. The Arizona lawman. I mean, that's fantastic. So this is a guy who was involved. He had locked up Dillinger in Arizona, right? I think Dillinger broke out, if that story is correct.
Well, no, not from him. That was the thing. You know, Dillinger.
Oh, okay, am I wrong? Okay.
Well, no. Dillinger had broken out of prison, winds up in a town in Arizona, and Andy Dobek is the jailer there. They arrest him. They put him in the jail, and Andy Dobek's like, nobody is going to get this. Is going to break him out of my jail. They had arrested Dillinger and his gang with all their guns. So he handed the guns out to all of his deputies. They surrounded the jailhouse. They put the guns. They put somebody with one of Dillinger's guns outside of every cell. This was escape proof, because what they had to do was transfer Dillinger from Arizona to a truly escape proof prison, I believe, back in Indiana. And so Andy Dobek made sure of this. They put Dillinger, you know, on the train or however they got him back, and they brought him to the escape proof prison from which he escaped, which is great. Wow. So, but Andy kept Dillinger. And then, as the story goes, you know, Andy went on. He went on with his life, and then he retired. He retired to Santa Catalina Island, off the coast here. It's a resort island where a lot of Hollywood people would go and on their yachts and premiere a movie at one of the towns there. Tierney went on a party boat to Catalina Island, and winds up, of course, getting drunk on the island, starting a fight in one of the restaurants. He's hauled into jail, and the jailer is Andy Dobek, who had taken a part-time job because his daughter lived on the island.
Life imitating art, man.
Yeah. And of course, you know, all the press went after Andy Dobek to say, what's it like? You actually jailed Dillinger and Dillinger. Nobody's ever done this. And he's like, I'm like, get out of here. I'm not talking to you.
And he didn't seem to want the fame from it. Yeah. No, Andy Dobek seemed like a quiet guy.
He wouldn't play along.
So there's, you know, a couple of major tragedies in Tierney's life. I want to talk about the first one really quickly, and I may ask you to surmise your opinion on it. But the first one being that Rita Johnson incident. So happens at the Chateau Marmont, which, gosh, that place could talk, right? And so she goes into a coma, the story being that a hairdryer hit her on the head. I'm curious, any thoughts on that? I mean, do you think that's the real story? Do you think there was something darker that had happened, or do you even care to comment? You know.
Rita Johnson was one of Tierney's girlfriends at this time early 1950s. And again, she was heading out on a date with one of her boyfriends. Her girlfriend went over to see how she was doing. And she was sort of in a daze, didn't know what happened, and her head was bleeding. And she wound up being in a coma. Right. And she apparently, she says she lost her memory, didn't know what happened. The cops got there and they heard the story from one of the maids, which was she was sitting under one of these hair. And these are these big old hair dryers, with these big 50 pound lids. Is that they thought that perhaps the hair dryer slipped and hit her in the head. And that's what happened, because she mentioned something about that before she passed out. The detectives who showed up didn't buy it. They said, nah, this woman took a beating. And then there was a rumor that was floated, I believe, by Walter Winchell in the papers, that it wasn't the current boyfriend that they knew, who was a writer. He was cleared. He had an alibi, but it might have been a boyfriend who was known to beat up women. Now Tierney was not known to lay his hands on women.
He
beat up a lot of men, but he was a courtly guy, and and there was a reason why he had, you know, girlfriends who were like, you know, socialized. Gloria Vanderbilt was his date for a long time. People like that. He was a charming guy,
and they seemed to stick by him, a lot of these girlfriends too.
Because when he wasn't drinking, he was charming. He was courtly. It looked like the person who was the real suspect was Broderick Crawford.
Interesting.
Who Broderick Crawford had been accused of domestic violence more than once, and he was a very ugly drunk, a bad drunk as well. But then again, Rita never talked. Rita said she never remembered what happened. She was under the care of her mother, and her mother wouldn't talk. Her mother said, "Well, if she remembers, we'll bring her and she'll talk."
Yeah, I was just curious. I was curious. I wonder if you'll indulge me. I want to read from your book real quick, because this part broke me. This is where I was just heartbroken for him. So, you should know, you wrote the book, of course. But Lawrence Tierney, I mean, he ends up in the psych ward. He's in that church with no shoes. I mean, this seems like a low point in his life. Low point in anyone's life. And I want to read, because this is where I just was heartbroken. So the final tragedy. With those words, Jimmy Fiddler was closing the book on Lawrence Tierney. After all of Fiddler's lectures and warnings, the final chapter ended with Lawrence Tierney as the sole victim, bound in a straitjacket in a rubber room in a psycho ward, not to be seen in public or heard from for a long, long time. Hours later, Tierney showed up in a bar. And I was just heartbroken, Bert. I was like, oh, even at this point, he goes back to a bar. And that's when I had to mark that page, because that just was heartbreaking to me, that here he is at this low point, and you think maybe this is his rock bottom, and he's back in a bar. Tough reading,
that,
man.
That to me was the saddest story, where these two cops, 1951, are called to St. Monica's Church in Santa Monica. It's the church that they built the movie Going My Way with Bing Crosby, was based on what went on in that church. Right now, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger's parish. Right now, as a matter of fact, Arnie goes there a lot. The real church. They get called to a report that there's a bum. That's what they used to call them in those days. A barefoot bum hanging around, lurking around outside the church. Two cops arrive. They see this man in tattered clothes, etc. He ducks into the church. Here we go. The cops follow the guy into the church, and he is wild-eyed and crazed, and he's in the sanctuary of the church by the altar, and he's saying, you can't arrest me. I have sanctuary. You're not going to kill me like you killed Robert Walker. Now, the actor Robert Walker had died recently. He was a diehard alcoholic as well. His doctor had given him some medicine that killed him. And so Tierney said, you're not going to kill me like Robert Walker. And the two cops are there going, well, maybe he does have sanctuary. I don't know. So they went over to a priest, and they said, are we allowed to arrest him here? And he said, yeah, we got morning mass. Get this guy out of here. So they had to fashion a straitjacket. The two cops got him, and they hustled him away. And it was a heartbreaking scene, because of course the press showed up, and there's Lawrence Tierney being led into a car that was going to bring him over to the psychiatric hospital. It wasn't even an ambulance. He had to sit in the back seat of a car as he's glaring into the camera, looking as it's probably the meanest, scariest Lawrence Tierney ever looked. And you want to cry when you see the picture, because you know how sad it is. Yeah. They called his younger brother down to the police precinct. Tierney punched his brother when he saw him. He was in a delirium. The brother gave a press conference and wept and said, Larry's really sick. He needs some help. For the last month, he's actually been, trying not to drink. He's been under a doctor's care, and he actually escaped. So again, yes, all the newspapers, of course, said, Dillinger goes crazy. Dillinger does this. There was no sympathy for him at all.
Yeah.
He's arrested 2 weeks later, again, or however many hours after that article came out. He's arrested in a bar barefoot. Showed up, just burst into the bar and said, I'll take anybody in the joint. So here's what happens. He goes to court, and this was actually the article arrested for the 13th time. The judge, who he'd been before this judge 13 times, says, okay, Mr. Tierney, this is it. I mean, they didn't charge him. They didn't charge him for the church incident. They said this guy was mentally unbound. It was sad. He didn't get charged for that, but he was charged for starting the fight in the bar. So they said, okay, look, this is it. We've had it. I've fined you. I've sent you to jail for 30 days here and there. It's time for you to go away for a while. You got to think about this. You're going to go away to jail. But if you promise never to drink again, I'll let you off with a fine. And Tierney's like, Your Honor, yes, I promise I'll never drink again. You promise now, not even a little bit of beer. Your Honor, I will never drink again. That held out for a few weeks.
Yeah.
But that happened, the medical establishment let him down. The justice system let him down. The studios let him down. Here he is, RKO Radio Pictures is about to cut him loose, but they say, his movies are really making money here. We've got it. We're going to star Lawrence Tierney in a movie called The Bodyguard. And he's going to play a good guy. So maybe if he's playing a good guy, he'll be good off screen instead of being a bad guy. That didn't work either, And the media had great fun with him. They loved it. They nailed it every time he got in trouble, except for this one columnist, Jimmy Fiddler. Fiddler was the only one who kept saying, this guy needs help. This guy should be institutionalized. This guy, you know, should be sent away because he's going to hurt someone. He's going to kill someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Fiddler. Yeah. Fiddler was always very vocal about that. So a couple of, another thing too, is there was a couple of, you know, pretty big lost opportunities for Lawrence Tierney. First of which is on the waterfront, the role of Charlie, you know, the role in the subsequent Oscar nomination went to Rod Steiger, right? Or was it a win or just, yeah, Oscar nomination.
Oscar nomination. Yeah.
That's heartbreaking too.
Well, that was the thing. Here he is. He was at a low point. This is like 1953 when they made the film, I believe, on the waterfront. It came out, I think, in 54. Here he is. He's offered this role. They weren't offering him enough money. It's like, what? You know, in 52, he is he finally, you know, he's been in trouble. He's making independent films now. He's no longer signed to RKO. Cecil B. DeMille casts him in The Greatest Show on Earth alongside Charlton Heston and Jimmy Stewart, sure. This blockbuster giant movie. And Cecil B. DeMille, he says he's going to hire Tierney to play the crook, the criminal who's running the crooked games on the Midway and is somewhat responsible for the train crash in it. Anyway, he takes a liking to Tierney. There's one point where Cecil B. DeMille's got a scene where he's got to get seven or eight people into the shot, and he can't figure it out. And Tierney goes, excuse me, Mr. DeMille? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, why don't you try it this way? And everybody, like, gasps. And DeMille goes, all right. Yeah, hey, Larry, that's right. That works fine. Thank you. And he takes a real shine to Tierney, and he says, you know what? We're going to take care of you, Larry. You're going to get a three-picture deal with Paramount. This is a Paramount picture. I'm going to get you a contract here. You're going to get a three-picture deal at Paramount. You're going to get your insurance back, et cetera, and you're not going to have to worry, you know, anymore. We're going to get you back on track. Great. 3 weeks later, Tierney gets into a big fight, yeah. And that goes away. And that happened over and over again.
Sure. And all the while, too, you have to remember, as you point out in the book, his older movies are still popular. So whether it's they're still in the theaters or now they're on TV – so he's still kind of maintaining that level of stardom, even though it's going longer and longer stretches with him being in significant roles.
Yeah. And he's also, the thing with Tierney is, you know, he tried Alcoholics Anonymous. As a matter of fact, he was really a cheerleader for Alcoholics Anonymous his entire life. When he was older, he'd walk on the Venice boardwalk and see, you know, winos and stuff. And he'd give them a card or tell them where they can go to a meeting, but it never took for him. And he would do interviews, and he would say, you know, I'm really sorry. I'm trying AA. I'm trying. It isn't working. I can't do it. And he would do this bare knuckle, white knuckle, you know, not drinking for as much as 6 months. He'd really try, and then he would slip, and then he would give up and go into another binge.
Sure. Sure. So, let's, you know, obviously he had a complicated relationship with his brothers. His two younger brothers were, I think it was Gerald Tierney, who was most famously known as Scott Brady, another successful actor. And then Ed Tierney, his youngest brother. How did it come about that Lawrence Tierney had a daughter that Ed raised?
That's a very difficult situation here. Lawrence Tierney met a woman, Ann Winterburn. They had an affair. She got pregnant, and it's interesting. I found this out. I spoke to a family member after the book came out. This will have to go into you'll have a preview of the trade paperback, I guess. I got this information a little bit late, but when she was pregnant, her father, Anne's father, wanted to talk to the guy who knocked her up and said, I want to talk to this Lawrence Tierney. And so they went to a bar in Pasadena. She lived in Santa Monica. Went over to Pasadena, found Lawrence Tierney at a bar, brought him back to the house, sat him on the couch, and began to lecture him. And Lawrence Tierney just sat there with his head down. And then Anne came into the house and said to her father, "Who's that? That's not Lawrence Tierney. Tierney had sent another guy to pretend it was him."
Oh my gosh! Wow.
So he ran off, and there was great, you know, consternation among the family. And then about a year later, she had had the child already. She met his, you know, she had known his younger brother, met his younger brother, Ed, who had a semi-career in acting. He wasn't as into acting as his brothers were. He married her and raised Elizabeth as his own daughter. And he had two other sons.
Who had two other sons? Ed?
Ed did, yeah.
Ed did with Anne Winterbourne?
With Anne, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, one of his sons is Michael Tierney.
That's right.
Who became Larry's after his father died, became Lawrence's caretaker and de facto manager for the last 20 years of his life. They called him Saint Michael because he really took care of him.
Let's start with another. So I've mentioned there's a couple of lost opportunities. The other one that really jumped out at me, a movie that I love, the movie Joe. I love the movie Joe. You know, Peter Boyle, a really young Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
So that the role that of Joe played by Peter Boyle, that could have been Lawrence Tierney, correct?
Well, John Avildsen, the director, wanted Peter Boyle as Joe. This was supposedly a World War II veteran who winds up with the shooting at the end. But the studio said, no, you can't. He's too young. Peter Boyle's too young. You got to get somebody who fits, you know, the age and the role. And Lawrence Tierney fit the role perfectly as this gruff, as Joe. So Avildsen agreed. And then what happened was, again, there's two stories about what happened. Lawrence Tierney, when they brought him to a department store for wardrobe fittings, et cetera, he either urinated on one of the production assistants or he urinated on a sales lady on the escalator.
He liked to urinate on public and on people. Yeah.
Yeah. He became more and more outside society as he got older and came to societal conventions, and he lost that role. And then they said, okay, you can have Peter Boyle. You know, there you go.
Yeah. He would have crushed that role too. I love the movie, but I could see Peter Boyle would have been a lot more frightening, I think, than Peter Boyle would have been.
Yeah.
More manipulative of that main character of the father, you know?
The thing was, is that Tierney was a great actor. That's what made this book different, or the story different than just the usual, you know, dark side underbelly of Hollywood story. Tierney was a really good actor. He never made it to Broadway. He wanted to be a Broadway actor. He wanted to work on Broadway because he was a very good dramatic actor on stage. He did radio plays, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But the times that he almost made it to Broadway, at one point he got in a fight with the director. Another time the director accused him of being drunk during a rehearsal and fired him.
Yeah, because he almost did something with Gloria Vanderbilt, right? I think it was directed by Sanford Meisner, wasn't?
Yes, and Meisner fired him. Yeah,
And that was because
he was allegedly drunk. But he did regional theater. He did summer stock. He did theater outside of New York.
Rave reviews too, wasn't there? Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He did A Streetcar Named Desire in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He did it for one night. He went and got drunk and got kicked off the next day. But he was compared favorably to Brando. He was compared favorably to Humphrey Bogart in The Petrified Forest.
Right.
In The Last Mile, which was done by, I believe it was Spencer Tracy. He did that on stage, and everybody said he was a great actor. You know, it was funny, in his later years, 1975, he winds up getting cast in Death of a Salesman. Martin Balsam played Willie Loman. He played Willie Loman's brother, who appears, I think, in these as a ghost in some like sort of flashback scenes. And he also understudied as Willie Loman. It happened in Philadelphia. It was a limited run there. And as usual, somebody gets drunk, there's a fight, and somebody gets drunk and runs away from the play. But in this case, it wasn't Lawrence Tierney. It was the director, George C. Scott. Mm. George C. Scott was the director. He runs away, and Arthur Miller comes in and takes over the directing.
Right.
So now you have Lawrence Tierney being directed by Arthur Miller in Death of a Salesman. And again, he got great reviews for that.
Wow. You know, I love George C. Scott, but he's a notorious drinker as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Tierney probably egged him on a bit. I'm sure they were drinking, afterwards. But that was another thing with Tierney. When he made his comeback, one of the reasons that made him significant was the type of roles that he got. Yeah, he was in some B movies and stuff, but he makes a comeback. Is really his first role that he gets is a movie called Such Good Friends. And it's directed by Otto Preminger. In 75, he makes a movie called Bad, produced, you know, it's Andy Warhol's Bad. You know, Tierney's in an Andy Warhol movie. Then he gets cast in Arthur. And yes, that really did it. He had one scene. It was a diner scene with where Dudley Moore is trying to propose to the waitress played by Liza Minnelli.
Sure.
And in this case, Dudley Moore is the drunk, you know, Tierney's just the guy who wants to get his role with his coffee. And he keeps interrupting. And it was a funny scene. And he was noticed in that. Then his old pal, John Cassavetes, puts him in the movie Gloria. Then he's cast in Pritzi's Honor.
He became friends with Nicholson on that too, right?
He was friends with Nicholson from the old days. He knew Nicholson. He was friends with Nicholson. And John Huston, you know, directed that.
Yeah.
He was in James Cagney's final movie, Terrible Joe Moran, which was a boxing movie on a TV movie.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. When he was, yeah, I remember that in the book. Yeah.
And then Norman Mailer directs him in Tough Guys Don't Dance. He worked with John Sayles. So he worked with some really significant people because by that time in his life, and it happened on television as well, was that they wanted to work with Lawrence Tierney. Well, we want to put Tierney in our movie. Yeah. He came with a warning label, but they go, nah, we'll handle him. Sure. And sometimes they couldn't handle him.
Well, another part of the book that really made me sad too was like later in life. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, there were times when he wasn't acting, he had odd jobs or construction, but the horse-drawn carriage years where, and maybe, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like that's when he was maybe at his happiest, you know?
In the 1970s, you know, he'd worked in construction. He'd worked in as a bartender, and suddenly there's a newspaper article with a photograph in the New York papers, which says, you know, Lawrence Tierney finally makes it to Broadway. And it's a picture of him with a horse in front of a Broadway theater. And they had outed him as the driver of one of the hansom carriages, one of the horse-drawn buggies that takes tourists through Central Park. And that picture and that story spread in every paper in the country. I did the research. That photo went everywhere. This was worse than Lawrence Tierney being found with a needle in his arm on the floor of a bathroom. How could he go from handsome to handsome, from Hollywood to horses? This was as far as the press was concerned, this was the worst, the biggest fall anyone could ever take. But it's one of the few photos you see where Tierney smiling.
Right.
He's happy. And he talked about it later on a cable public access show and talked about how he just loved it. He loved to put the kids on his lap and let them pretend they're riding the horse. He had a great time doing that. And he did it for a number of years until his brother, Scott Brady, died. Both his brothers died relatively young. When Scott Brady died in 1985, he came out to L.A. permanently and really began that second part of his career.
Sure. So let's talk about the other tragedy, which was the Bonnie Jones incident. This made me sad too. He seemed to really care for Bonnie Jones. And then, you know, she fell out of a window or jumped out of a window. And then there were conflicting stories. I think it was a suicide. However, maybe, I don't know if it was just drunken stories, but he would kind of twist it maybe as if it was some kind of a revenge tale. But what was your take on that?
Again, it all depends on who you talk to.
Right.
This was a story. In the mid 70s, Tierney was about 58, 25-year-old Bonnie Jones. She was either a secretary or a hooker or a drug addict. You hear different stories about her. But Tierney was one evening sitting in her living room. I believe it was a fourth floor walk up in Midtown Manhattan. They're sitting in the living room. They both have drinks. She's sort of sashaying around the living room in her nightgown. So that kind of shows you something there. She's with her nightgown, and Tierney's getting lucky at 58 there with the way he looked.
There you go.
And she says, I think I'm going to go out the window. And did. And police, you know, they called the cops. Police got there. They found her on an outcropping on the second floor of the building. She was in very bad shape. They got her to the hospital, and she died. But of course, they brought Tierney in. This made headlines. The cops grilled him for, you know, 24 hours, and he had the same story. She went out the window. You know, I loved her. She was a great kid. I really liked her. I loved her. I can't believe she did that. I don't know what happened. As time went on, you know, he told people there were rumors that there was a pimp involved, and that there was a fight between Tierney and the pimp, and that the pimp or drug dealer accidentally knocked her out the window, or he threw her out the window in front of Tierney. One of these things. What one person, David Del Valle, who's a Hollywood historian and a friend of Tierney's, who Tierney moved in with for a while there, said that Tierney told him, "I don't remember. We were really drunk. I don't remember." You know, no one that knows him, you know, from family to friends or whatever, think that he would have thrown her out the window. He really, you know, that police didn't either. The police believed him. He was totally broken up by that. But something happened, whether it was just, you know, whether she decided to do it, or, you know, or it was an accident. Don't really know.
Gotcha. So now he's older. He's in the midst of his great comeback, like you mentioned. I mean, I only knew Lawrence Tierney from a couple projects, one of them being Arthur, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And of course, Reservoir Dogs. Let's talk a little bit about Reservoir. I'm a big Tarantino guy. I've got my Once Upon a Time in Hollywood poster in my back corner over here.
Great.
The book even opens with them getting into a fight. And then we hear about it much later in the book. But wow, I mean, I have such much more of appreciation for the film now, just knowing more of who Joe Cabot, the actor, was, you know, playing Joe Cabot. But let's talk about that. He's working with Tarantino. They did not get along.
when they were hiring Tierney, Lawrence Bender was the producer. He was Tarantino's, you know, producing partner. They called some of Tierney's friends and said, "Look, we're going to hire Lawrence Tierney for this. What do you think?" And he said, "Okay, look, I got one of his friends said, look, let me tell you, he's going to need a minder. First of all, Tierney he'll get bored on the set. He's going to wander off. I've shot with him. We're in the middle of a shoot. He just wanders off of some guy down the street. Next thing you know, he's at a restaurant with them. He's gone. You know, he's had a stroke. He doesn't remember his lines. He gets angry. You really need somebody just to take care of Tierney. He's going to be difficult." And Bender said, "Yeah, fine. We're fine. Click. You know, we'll take care of it." Right. So they wound up shooting a lot of Tierney's material that first week. And Tierney, again, would forget his lines. He'd blame the other actors. He would snap it at Tarantino. One of the things that really got Tarantino upset was that, you know, this young director would say, "Okay, you know, now, Larry, here's what we're going to do." And while he was talking, Tierney just walk away. And then he didn't, just like, "Well, I go, what? I'm talking." And he's gone.
Right.
And so it got worse and worse. But they made it through the first week, and they were on that martini shot, the last shot of the week on a Friday. And Tierney, they were doing actually the opening scene, which is in the waffle, the pancake house.
Sure.
And they're around the table, and Tarantino had to get that one last shot of Tierney, and Tierney wasn't paying attention, et cetera. And he goes, "Look, Lawrence." And he made an ultimate mistake. The young director made a very rookie mistake. He put his hands on Lawrence Tierney, and he tried to physically shift him to where he wanted him to be for the camera shot. And Tierney said, "Get your fucking hands off me," and gave him a push. And he said, what? And then Tarantino pushed back. And next thing you know, as Michael Madsen told me, everybody looked at it. It was like Frankenstein getting up. Suddenly Lawrence Tierney's up, and Lawrence Tierney's swinging at the director, and the director's swinging at Lawrence. And so Harvey Keitel jumps up and Madsen, and they separate the two. And Tarantino just looks around and says, "You fat fuck, you're fired. Get off my set." And they separate. And again, Lawrence Tierney walks out down the middle of the street. And it was a busy boulevard. He's walking right down the middle of the yellow line. And as Tarantino remembers it, the crew all cheered. "Yeah, okay, boss." Because he was trying to show the crew that, you know, nobody does this to a director on his set.
Sure.
Well, what really happened was Lawrence Bender came running in from the next room, and Keitel was on the producer, said, "You can't fire him. We've shot most of his – we can't do this. We can't afford to replace him. This is a low-budget movie.
Can't reshoot."
So they said, "Oh, boy." And they had to find – they had to track down Larry. Larry
seems
went
like
home.
Michael Madsen got a kick out of him, whereas Tim Roth didn't like him at all.
Yeah, that was the thing. Tim Roth was an actor. I met Roth back then in those days, and at a bar on the Sunset Strip, a hotel bar that we used to hang out, and he used to stay at the hotel, and you'd see him a lot, and he would drink, and he was a serious actor. He'd even say that. He'd say, "I'm not a movie star, I'm an actor." And it's like, okay, you know, the master thespian. He couldn't take Lawrence Tierney's, you know, tomfoolery as he saw it. But Tierney went home in a rage. This was Friday. And he went to Bordner's, the place mm-hmm. that we all know. And he got very drunk at Bordner's. And he got more drunk. And he got in a fight with the doorman. And he put his fist through one of the glass windows at the front of Bordner's. And then went back to his apartment and got more and more drunk and more angry. And then meantime, in the meantime, Tarantino called him and said, okay, look, I'm sorry. You know, well, it's fine. We'll get you back on the set. Well, let's make up, et cetera. We'll be friends, and rehired him. But by this point, Tierney had been drinking a lot and he was very, very angry. His son, his nephew, Michael, showed up because he heard that what was going on. Michael, unfortunately, hadn't been with him on the set that day. Michael showed up at his apartment, spent some time there to calm his uncle down. He actually tried to get him to do some meditation with him just to cool down a bit. But once the word meditation came along, Tierney had enough and reached into a drawer and pulled out a 357 Magnum, Dirty Larry, and started shooting at Michael. Now, the bullets went through the wall where there was another family in there. Michael vamoosed it, got out to the street, and he did what I was told. Michael's cousin told me, not only, you know, saved Tierney's life in the end, but also saved Quentin Tarantino's shooting schedule. When he called the police, he didn't say there's a guy with a gun shooting. He said, there's an emergency here with my uncle. Can you get somebody over here? Police came. Tierney was arrested. They threw him in jail over the weekend. There was talk of charging him with attempted murder. And everybody got together, Michael, Courtney Joyner, Tierney's agent, et cetera, said, we can't tell Quentin. We can't let Quentin know about this. It's gonna ruin the insurance. They're gonna ruin the surety bond on the film. We've got to get this, we've got to take care of this. So they managed over the weekend to get him bailed out. His manager put his house up, you know, the mortgage up for the bail. They got him back on the set on Monday. I think he was under a work release program with an ankle bracelet, and he managed to, you know, finish his role. And Tarantino was never the wiser until after it happened.
Sure, man, I love that, and he killed it in the movie. I mean, he did a great job. I know they had to shoot around him a little bit. I think he had trouble remembering some lines, but yeah. And then crashes a set of Pulp Fiction. You know, which I thought was great. And then ultimately, you know, Quentin wanted to work with him again on Four Rooms, but I guess it was Tim Roth that put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, Tim Roth wouldn't do it. You know, the interesting thing was people, again, see the Reservoir Dogs as Tierney's big comeback. But what I was surprised when you do a little research, you realized Tierney was working very steadily all through the 80s on just about every major television drama and some comedies. You know, he was in Hunter. He was in Star Trek: The Next Generation. He was in, you know, if you remember the Dabney Coleman show, the Slap Maxwell story.
Sure.
He was in Remington Steele.
Hill Street Blues.
And Hill Street Blues. He had a recurring role in the last two seasons. Lawrence Tierney had the last line in the last episode, the last scene, in the last episode of this very significant television drama. He had the last words, Hill Street. You know, he had a scene with Dennis Franz and he picks up the phone. And Lawrence Tierney was the one who said goodbye to, you know, to Hill Street. Yeah. Because again, these directors or these producers knew of his past. They knew of his reputation and they wanted to work with him. I think some of his best work was done on television in the 80s. He did in 1985, he did Tales from the Dark Side, which was a
sure
episodic show. It was called There's Something Wrong with Mary Jane, and it was a takeoff on The Exorcist. And Lawrence Tierney played an exorcist with his wife, who was played by Phyllis Diller. Oh. And it was a comedy, and it was hilarious. And he could see it online. You could find it on the internet. And he's hilarious.
Get out of here, you fucking demon. I can't imagine how he would do an exorcism.
It's great. You know, and
I got to check that out. That's fantastic.
And he was, you know, he co-starred with O.J. Simpson. Well, really, he had the famous baseball scene in The Naked Gun.
That's right. That's right.
He was the manager, the manager of the California Angels in The Naked Gun. So he had, you know, he did a lot of work through the 80s.
Sure. Well, you've been talking about the book, like his family said he died with he had an estate. Like, it wasn't like he was broke. And I mean, he had a significant amount of money and,
You know? Yeah, friends would go over to his apartments. It always looked like, no matter how long he lived in an apartment, whether it was, for 6 months, it looked like somebody had been there for 30 years collecting newspapers. You know, there was just papers everywhere. It was crazy. And Courtney Joyner remembers going into his kitchen and trying to clean it up a bit and finding an open tomato soup can and lifting it up, and stuck to it was a $15,000 residual check that it was just, he just left it there. So he did have some money in the end. Yeah.
So, 1976, he had a stroke. Is that correct? I think it was in
early 80s. I think it was early 80s. Yeah. Yeah.
And then he something I had no clue about, but he would have been in Armageddon. He filmed for the film Armageddon. I think he was Bruce Willis's father.
Yeah, they had to figure out who's the toughest guy in the world. I mean, Bruce Willis played this tough, wildcat, this driller who is so tough he's going to go into outer space and drill a hole in a meteor that's coming toward Earth. Who could be tougher than Bruce Willis? Well, Lawrence Tierney, of course. And they called him and they said, Mr. Tierney, want to get you over here? It'll be a 1 day role, you and Bruce Willis. And he's like, nah, I'm not interested. I'd rather sit and watch TV. Hung up the phone. And he wasn't interested. And his nephew said, look, they're going to give you 10 grand for 1 day to just do a scene with Bruce Willis. I don't care. But they wound up, the way they got him was they got a young production assistant to go, oh, Mr. Tierney, please, a young girl, please, sure. Woman, come on, we'll have fun. All right, I'll do it for you. And he did the scene. It was, and he said, I do these scenes, they'll get cut out of the movie anyway. And in the end, it was cut out of the film. But it was released as part of the director's cut on DVD and Blu-ray. So, and the scene is also, you can see the scene on the internet, but it was finally restored to the film. And it's a touching scene. It's, it's Lawrence Tierney and Bruce Willis. Willis is seeing his old man in a nursing home. And there's a bit of, poetry and love involved there. And it's a very cool scene.
Yeah, that's pretty neat for him. Was that his last project that he worked on?
He made one last project, which was a movie called Evicted. And it was a low budget punk rock and roll movie that was directed by, written by, starred with his son, with his nephew, Michael Tierney. It was Michael Tierney's film.
That's right. Michael Tierney. Yeah. And it went to some film festivals. I forgot about that. Yeah.
It went to some film festivals that had an opening on Hollywood Boulevard. And it finally got a DVD release, and it's a good, low budget, rock movie. A couple of the people that were in it, Shannon Elizabeth was in it, and then while it was being in post production, she got a job in American Pie, and she became famous.
Sure.
And there's another actor who played Napoleon in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. He's actually in it as well. So he wound up having a couple people that you've heard of. But Lawrence Tierney was the name in the film, and he played the uncle, or he played a neighbor of Michael Tierney's character, who kind of looked out for him. And Tierney had some nice words that sort of served as a valedictory to him, sort of almost like an epitaph, where he said, I've done a lot in this life. I've done a lot of jobs in this and that, and pretty soon this mighty oak is going to fall, but it's going to take a strong wind to knock over this mighty tree. It's great. Sure. And finally that wind came. Yeah.
For a lot of this book, I went back and forth. Do I like this guy? Do I not like this guy? Cause he's frustrating and he can't get out of his own way with the drinking, but he's clearly talented and he is a gentleman. But I'll tell you, at the end, you had me, I got a little teary eyed, especially, with his ashes and there's this family who has his ashes. I believe they took it out to a river, if I'm not mistaken. And the last cup of ashes anyway.
Some of the ashes wound up in the mouths of
that's right.
his cousins, friends on the football team, etc. But yeah, one of his cousins took it up to a river and set Larry free at the end. It was great. And I went and met I talked to these guys on the phone. They're in Brooklyn, and I went and I met them a couple of months ago. I went out there and at the Knights of Columbus Hall and spent an afternoon drinking with them.
Did
great,
you really?
Great guys. Yeah, they're my pals now.
I love it.
And I went to the bar where they had left some of his ashes. Went there and met them there, and they were great. They all remembered Larry. As a matter of fact, one of them gave me that's right, we don't have a video here, but he gave me a framed poster that Larry had given him you know, back in 1984, you know, good luck always to Ed. And I said, you sure you want to give me this? He's like, yeah, I want you to have it. I want you to have it. So like, that was so sweet.
That's great.
But yeah. Well, good
guy. I appreciate you doing this, Bert. I love the book. I have a new appreciation for Lawrence Tierney. The book is Lawrence Tierney, Hollywood's Real Life Tough Guy. Where can we find the book, Bert?
You should be able to find the book wherever books are sold, but you never do. Of course, it's on Amazon.
Sure.
You can go to our website, lawrencetierneybook.com, which can hook you up with the Larry Edmonds bookshop on Hollywood Boulevard. Larry, it was Lawrence Tierney's local bookstore. They have autographed copies there. But ooh, yeah, you know, Amazon's got it. And if your bookstore doesn't have it, I'd say ask for it.
Fair enough. I got it on Amazon. Anything else you want to pitch before we wrap this up?
No, man. You know, thanks very much for this. And you know, it was fun writing the book. I got to like Lawrence Tierney a lot from writing it and getting to know the people that knew him. And
yeah, one of my favorite things is when I now have a new appreciation for something that may have slipped through or may have been forgotten. And so now I will never forget Lawrence Tierney. And every time I see him, I'll have a whole new appreciation for it. And that's because of you. So I appreciate you doing it.
And I appreciate that. Thanks very much.
Of course, man. Thanks so much, Bert. Okay. That's right, Michael Tierney. Yeah, and it went to some film festivals. I forgot about that. Yeah,
it went to some film festivals. It had an opening on Hollywood Boulevard, and it finally got a DVD release, and it's a good, you know, low budget, you know, rock movie. A couple of the people that were in it, Shannon Elizabeth was in it, and then while it was being in post production, she got a job in American Pie and she became famous.
Sure.
And there's another actor who played Napoleon in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. He's actually in it as well. So he wound up having a couple people that you've heard of, but Lawrence Tierney was the name in the film. And he played the uncle, or he played a neighbor of Michael Tierney's character who kind of looked out for him. And Tierney had some, you know, some nice words that sort of served as a valedictory to him, sort of almost like an epitaph, where he said, you know, I've done a lot in this life. I've done a lot of jobs in this and that. And, you know, pretty soon this mighty oak is going to fall, but it's going to take a strong wind to knock over this mighty tree. You know, it's great. Sure. And finally that wind came. Yeah.
You know, for a lot of this book, you know, I went back and forth. Do I like this guy? Do I not like this guy? You know, cause he's frustrating and he can't get out of his own way with the drinking, but he's clearly talented and he is a gentleman. But I'll tell you, at the end, you had me. I got a little teary-eyed, you know, especially, you know, with his ashes and there's this family who has his ashes. I believe they took it out to a river, if I'm not mistaken, and the last cup of ashes anyway. You know,
some of the ashes wound up in the mouths of
that's right.
his cousins, friends on the football team, et cetera. But yeah, he one of his cousins took it up to a river and, you know, set Larry free at the end. It was great. And I went and met, you know, I talked to these guys on the phone. They're in Brooklyn, and I went and I met them a couple of months ago. I went out there and at the Knights of Columbus Hall and spent an afternoon drinking with them.
Did
great,
you really?
Great guys. Yeah. They're my pals now
out in the
Flatbush. And I went to the bar where they had left some of his ashes, went there. I met them there, and they were great. They all remembered Larry. As a matter of fact, one of them gave me that's right. We don't have a video here, but he gave me a framed poster that Larry had given him, you know, back in 1984. You know, good luck always to Ed. I said, you sure you want to give me this? He's like, yeah, I want you to have it. I want you to have it. So like, that was so sweet.
That's great.
But yeah, good guy.
I appreciate you doing this, Bert. I love the book. I have a new appreciation for Lawrence Tierney. The book is Lawrence Tierney, Hollywood's Real Life Tough Guy. Where can we find the book, Bert?
You should be able to find the book wherever books are sold, but you never do. Of course, it's on Amazon.
Sure.
You can go to our website, lawrencetierneybook.com, which can hook you up with the Larry Edmonds bookshop on Hollywood Boulevard. Larry, it was Lawrence Tierney's local bookstore. They have autographed copies there. But ooh, yeah, you know, Amazon's got it. And if your bookstore doesn't have it, I'd say ask for it.
Fair enough. I got it on Amazon. Anything else you want to pitch before we wrap this up?
No, man. You know, thanks very much for this. And, you know, it was fun writing the book. I got to like Lawrence Tierney a lot from writing it and getting to know the people that knew him. And
yeah. One of my favorite things is when I now have a new appreciation for something that may have slipped through or may have been forgotten. And so now I will never forget Lawrence Tierney. And every time I see him, I'll have a whole new appreciation for it. And that's because of you. So I appreciate you doing it.
And I appreciate that. Thanks very much.
Of course, man. Thanks so much, Bert.
Take care.
Wow, Bert Kearns, he's a great guest. That was a great podcast. I loved it. Do me a favor, pick up his book. It is Lawrence Tierney, a Hollywood's real-life tough guy. You can pick it up in bookstores. Of course, I purchased it on Amazon. If you buy his book on Amazon, go ahead and leave him a 5-star review. That always helps. While you're doing that, why don't you check me out on Twitter, at Fanacek Podcast. You can also check me out, hit me up on Facebook. That is Real Fanacek. And email me, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. I'm still sending out those stickers to anyone who asks. And do me a favor, like the podcast, rate it, review it, do all that stuff. And if that's not what you normally would do, I think this is what Lawrence Tierney would say to that.
Mind what you normally would do.
Have a great night, folks. And stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.